Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vonta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vonta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vonta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get a special offer of $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU Startups. That's vanta.com/EU Startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Kelly Kinnard, operating partner and head of talent at Khosla Ventures. Khosla Ventures was founded by Vinod Khosla, co-founder of Sun Microsystems and 20-year veteran of Kleiner Perkins. They have $19 billion in AUM, 100 plus M&A exits, 25 IPOs, and 35 plus unicorns over Khosla Ventures history. Kelly leads Khosla Ventures talent team, supports their 400 plus portfolio companies, and manages relationships with top senior executives in the industries they invest in. Kelly, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to meet you and thank you for having me.
Amazing. Kelly, so your role often feels like, you know, being a talent detective on uncovering perfect fit for each company. Can you share a story about a time when you felt like you found the missing puzzle piece for a company and what impact did it have?
Sure. I think the first example that comes to mind, I had a very young and great CEO come call me one day and he said, I'm hiring my first VP of sales and I don't know what questions to ask and I don't know what questions, how to interview VPs of sales. So I'm Googling how to interview VPs of sales and what questions to ask. And I appreciated that he was so open and so vulnerable with me and admitted that he didn't know what he was doing with that hire. And so I told him, well, I know what questions I typically ask and here's how I evaluate VP sales candidates. But I think my suggestion is that we get you some folks that are very experienced with this, that can tell you how they determine and interview VPs of sales, because it is a very specific role, a very specific function. So we happen to have a really senior established chief revenue officer that had been working in our portfolio. I think this guy had been part of like 3 or 4 IPOs. He was very senior, very experienced, very well known. His last company had a successful exit, so he was not working at the moment. And we were talking very regularly because I was trying to find him another home within our portfolio because he was so strong and senior, but the right opportunity just hadn't come up. Mm-hmm. So I called him and I said, as a favor to me, will you talk to this CEO and tell him how you would recommend recruiting and interviewing VPs of sales? And this chief revenue officer had hired and interviewed and recruited and managed dozens and dozens and dozens of senior sales execs throughout the course of his career. And he said, yeah, no problem. So I introduced them, set them up for a 30-minute phone call or Zoom. And this chief revenue officer, to his credit, God bless him, put together on his own, without me asking him to, a PowerPoint presentation for the CEO on how to interview, screen, and recruit VPs to sales candidates. And he took the CEO through this PowerPoint presentation. They ended up talking for 90 minutes. The CEO called me afterwards and said, that was the most valuable 90 minutes of my career. I felt like I just did a very immersive boot camp in hiring sales executives. And he asked him to be part of the process. So he joined the process. He became a board member. And then we ended up recruiting a senior sales executive that had worked for him prior. So there was already trust, rapport, you know, good references built into that hire. So the CEO felt more comfortable. And then this chief revenue officer would go to their office. And as they built out their sales team, he would drink a bunch of Red Bulls and spend a bunch of time with the sales team mentoring, coaching them on how to build their pipeline and how to run sales, how to scale. And he had so much knowledge and so much useful information that was invaluable to this CEO. He could have worked so hard and made so many pivots or mistakes and roadblocks, but this guy really helps sort of pave the way. And the company ended up being acquired successfully. This, you know, chief revenue officer who had been a board member had equity in the company. He made money. It was just a very satisfying sort of match on both sides. And so I kind of like that story because it really shows how a super knowledgeable, experienced person can really make a huge difference with a young company and or with a young founder.
Amazing, Kelly. Sounds like a match made in heaven. So imagine this. You're grabbing lunch with a potential candidate. What's your go-to meal that has the power to seal the deal? And what questions do you casually slip into the conversation to make sure it's actually a match made in startup heaven?
Sure. I actually don't like to have lunch with during interviews because I find it kind of inherently somewhat awkward. You know, I like to take a lot of notes and I actually write notes because that's just the way my brain processes information. So it's hard to do that if you're chewing and you're eating and there's just always some sort of inherent awkwardness, I think, sometimes when you're meeting people for the first time. So I actually avoid doing meals with candidates unless it's somebody I already know and already have rapport with and we can be more casual, more relaxed. But a question that I always like to ask at some point when it's appropriate in the conversation is ask them about people they work with now or people that they've worked with or for and ask them, what would they say about you? So they'll mention, you know, I worked for Eric. And I think when you ask the question, well, what will Eric say when I call him about you? And I think that has the ability to just kind of take things down to a more real level, because often people give you the sort of like PR script of like, well, I, you know, scaled this and I did that and I was, right, you know, I led this. But whenever you ask someone very specifically, what will that specific colleague say when I call them about you, so that they know that if you want to get to that person, you could. Obviously, you're not going to call anybody that they work with today unless it's appropriate. But, you know, there's just a lot of referencing that often takes place. And so I find that that makes people be sort of more honest. And then that's when you get sort of the real answers of, well, you know, they would say that I did a really good job at this, but I really struggled in the environment politically, or I really had a very difficult time managing my team or managing a specific person. Mm-hmm.
Sounds good. Thanks for sharing, Kelly. So talent needs, you know, are ever evolving. How do you stay ahead of the curve, ensuring you're not just, you know, filling positions, but hiring talent that will make a difference?
I think given the nature that I work in a venture capital firm and with a portfolio that is so leading edge, the companies that we're investing in today have the ability and hopefully will be incredibly disruptive to change industries over time, that I feel lucky that I get to work with such brilliant founders and CEOs who are doing things that have never been done before. And I think working with people like that challenges you and pushes you to think outside the box and not just think in sort of a safe way, because they are trying to remove massive glacial roadblocks in order to push through and create new industries that don't even exist that right, hopefully will change the world. So I think that just has the ability to sort of percolate and sort of translate into your way of thinking, because when you're around people like that, it changes how you think.
So you know, in a world where LinkedIn messages flood inboxes, how do you actually surprise and, like, I don't know, delight candidates? Any creative approaches that have yielded surprising results for you?
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, I get, you know, tons of LinkedIn in-mail messages a day. And I think the biggest mistake people make is that they come across very canned and very generic. Mm-hmm. And whenever they're very canned and very generic, I think we all have a tendency to ignore them. But when you're very specific about why you're reaching out to someone, you know, if you're referred by somebody, that's always the best subject line is that, you know, XYZ told me I should call you or network with you about this. That grabs people's attention. You know, if I get an email or an in-mail from someone mentioning a former colleague that I, you know, highly respect or someone I know or a friend, that's always going to grab my attention. So I think also just making it very personal, showing them that you actually read their profile. You know, sometimes people will mention things to me, you know, going back to my, you know, college education, and I'm like, God, they really read all the way down and they really, they weren't just looking at sort of the subject line or, you know, my current job today. Mm-hmm. So I think with all the noise, it's really important to be very personal and be clear. Nothing's more annoying than whenever people reach out with these super generic, like, I want to connect with you, but but they're not specific about why. You know, if somebody's reaching out to me about an opportunity, or I'm reaching out to someone about an opportunity, I'm very, very specific. This is for this company that does this, that is located here. This is the role. This is the title. This is who the founder, this is who the CEO is. The super generic, you know, let's grab, you know, 15 minutes. I just want to talk. No one has time for that. And people won't make time for that. But when you're very specific about why you're looking to connect with someone based on their network, their expertise, or their experience, or someone you know in common, I think people have are much more likely to respond.
100%. Kelly, so working with, you know, closely with founders can be like both thrilling and challenging. What's your secret sauce for, you know, building relationships with founders while also kind of gently challenging their perspectives when it comes to, I don't know, building a startup or talent acquisition?
Sure. I try to just tell them from the very first conversation that I'm really here to help them and support them, and that I want them to feel like I'm very approachable about anything. And I love it when they come to me with their sort of fears and vulnerabilities. And often they will tell me things that they wouldn't feel comfortable telling the person on the investment team that led the deal. And that they know that I'm really just here to help them. I'm not here to be sort of big brother. Yes, we do own a percentage of the company, but I try to make it clear that if they're successful, we're successful, and my incentives are really to help them succeed and scale, and I want what's best for them and anything I can do to make things easier, faster, better for them. I think is important. So I think that, and I think just following up and just doing what you say you're going to do and being responsive, is, you know, sadly sort of a low bar, but, something that they often tell me that they appreciate.
True. So, you know, also founders, they face a fast paced and like super unpredictable environment. From your perspective, what qualities set apart leaders who not only survive, but, you know, thrive amidst the uncertainties of building a startup?
I think how they manage stress is probably one of the most important, if not the most important. They are under tremendous stress and tremendous pressure. And the way that they handle that, the way that they manage that, whether it's, you know, walking their dog every day, or, you know, doing competitive triathlons in their free time, or reading, you know, fictional novels, whatever that may be. But I think whenever they realize that protecting their own physical, mental, and emotional health is really important, because everyone else at the company, everyone else on the team is looking at them and assessing, you know, if they're stressed or they're upset or they're worried, then everyone else picks up on that. And so it's really important that they stay as calm and as steadfast as possible. So I think they have to set boundaries and they have to just do things that protect them so that they can show up and be their best self. And it's a very easy job to get completely caught up in, where you ignore your, you know, physical health, mental health, emotional health, because there's always 100 things to do and you can work 100 hours a week every single week. But I think knowing when you need to unplug and when you need to do things that that get you out of your head and bring you joy, whether that's, you know, playing guitar or skiing, for example, are a commonality that I see amongst sort of successful CEOs that are able to sort of withstand the pressure cooker for the long term.
Amazing. Kelly, so Costa Ventures is known for its bold investments. How does the culture and vibe influence, you know, the way you approach talent partnerships and development within the portfolio?
I think it does, because I think Vinod Khosla in particular is not afraid of risk and he's not afraid of failure, and he would rather try to change an industry, disrupt an industry and have it not be successful than not try at all. It's very different from the way a lot of other investors approach investing. You know, I worked at Battery Ventures prior, which is a stage agnostic fund. They do seed, venture, growth, and private equity investing all the way through buyout. And so having been there prior, a lot of funds, and I think private equity often, whenever you invest in private equity, it's much more clinical and it's much more surgical in how you invest. You know exactly what you're buying. You have done a massive amount of due diligence. You know what the team, the market, the product looks like, and you know what you're getting. Whereas venture, you're making bets and you're making bold bets and big bets, but you're betting on a number of ideas and things all at once. And many things are completely unpredictable. So I think you have to be very comfortable with the unpredictability of that. But I think it definitely does permeate and translate into the way people approach things internally. People aren't afraid to ask questions and ask why, and, you know, doing things that are just safe and risk-free are not really valued necessarily or appreciated.
Awesome. Kelly, so you've had quite of a journey so far. Can you share, like, what has been, like, or maybe like a few moments, but let's say one. What has been one, like, of the toughest moments for you, and how did you actually navigate to, you know, get out of it?
The toughest moments, I would say, having to fire someone, firing people is horrible. I think that is very tough, very challenging. I definitely beat myself up about it, lose a lot of sleep about it. It makes you sort of question a lot of things about yourself, and it's very difficult. So I think that is difficult, and sort of realizing when it's just not working with someone and you need to let them go, and when it's time to move on is difficult. And I see our founders struggle with that too. Most of the time, people after it's over say they wish they had done it 3 months or 6 months earlier. Often people spend too much time hoping that the person will change or come around or things will improve. But often it doesn't. So knowing when to sort of pull the ripcord is a difficult thing to do. And I think it's hard because you're impacting people's livelihood and income and, you know, families. So it's something that you should take very seriously, but it's difficult. It's not fun.
Yeah. So Kelly, if you could, you know, time travel and give your younger self a piece of advice about navigating kind of the labyrinth of talent, what would that golden nugget be?
That's a good question. I mean, I never could have ever predicted that this is what I would be doing. If you had asked me coming out of college that I'd be doing this today, it's not something I ever would have ever foreseen, but I think leaning into, you know, where you feel like you're best suited and what your skills are and what you enjoy, you know, going back to the old adage, you know, if what you do for a living is fun, you'll never work a day in your life. Mm-hmm. I think, it's okay to choose professions and careers and jobs that you really enjoy and where you have a lot of, where it comes naturally. And I think whenever you choose something that comes somewhat naturally to you, then it will just be an easier career choice. So I think I would say just lean in and trust that it's all going to be okay. It'll all work out, and just lean in and trust that this is something that you'll enjoy, you'll be suited for, and will feel like a good match in the years to come.
Love it. Kelly, so let's maybe fast forward to 2030, which is not that far away. So what tech trend or innovation are you most excited about? And how do you think it will impact the talent landscape?
I mean, I hate to say this, but, you know, AI, because everyone's talking about AI all day, every day. But AI, it will be really interesting to see what happens. I mean, I think AI is going to fundamentally change a lot of things for everyone. But I think with that said, there will never be a replacement for one-on-one rapport, connections. AI will not be able to build relationships, you know, with humans one-on-one and be able to sort of assess people the way that you do when you connect with someone. But I think AI, you know, has the ability to be transformative in so many ways. It's going to be something that we all just expect. I mean, now every company does AI. You know, a company is shipping logistics with AI. They do beauty products with AI. It's something that we're all sort of beginning to take for granted and will take for granted. So how is that going to change things? It's going to be very interesting to see. There's a lot of exciting and thrilling things about it, but also obviously a lot of very scary things too. Time will tell.
Agreed. 100% agreed. Kelly, so imagine cost, like you or like Costla Ventures are hosting a dream dinner party for like tech leaders, past or present. Which tech legend, alive or not, would you invite? And what's the one burning question you'd ask them?
Sure. I think the first person that comes to mind is my former boss, who is Thomas Kurian, who was the president of Oracle and ran all of technology and reported to Larry Ellison. And I worked for him at Oracle, recruited all his most senior executives for the 4 years that I was there. He's now the CEO of Google Cloud. So I would love to sit down. We keep in touch, but I'd love to sit down and just gossip with him about the differences between Oracle and Google and what the transition has been for him at Google and how it's been navigating a completely different company, a completely different culture politically, and see how that's really sort of have an in-depth conversation with him about how that's going. I think it would be very interesting because I know a lot because we worked very, very closely together while I was there, how things worked at Oracle, but things are obviously very different at Google Cloud. So he'd be my first pick.
Sounds good. Sounds fun. Kelly, so I know that you do a bunch of different things outside of the, you know, world of VC and tech and talent recruitment. So maybe you can share with the audience, what's your goal to unplug and recharge activity? Any guilty pleasures or hobbies that you'd love to share?
Sure. For me, it's all about getting away from my computer, away from the screen, and being outside in nature. So I love getting to gather with friends to mountain bike or road bike or hike or walk. It's the best. I love when I catch up with a girlfriend over a bike ride or a hike and we're doing something healthy and we're outside versus, you know, meeting for brunch, for example. It really fuels me. It's something that I really need and something that I really look forward to. And it really helps me recharge.
Amazing. Kelly, last question for you. I've been really enjoying this conversation. I could talk with you, feels like, for hours. But so maybe Do you have any exciting projects either within Kozla Ventures or outside of it that you're looking forward to that you'd like to share with the audience?
Exciting projects in terms of like something
projects or new initiatives, like what do you got going on?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, this isn't necessarily work related, but I've become really interested in longevity and Peter Attia, the famous physician who wrote the book Outlive about longevity, is something that I'm really into. And I find myself being drawn to listening to more and more podcasts and reading more and more books written by doctors. I find health and healthcare so interesting, and we invest in a lot of healthcare companies, and we have about 100, 125 in our portfolio. And it's amazing to see what's happening and what's changing. For example, we have a company that is using AI to create primary care physicians for everyone, so that anyone, regardless of their regardless of if they have healthcare, their income, where they're located, could use a physician using AI. And I've seen demos of the product, and it's truly amazing what it's able to figure out and diagnose. Another company in our portfolio is using AI for mental health. It's able to interact with somebody, ask a bunch of, not even a bunch of questions, and figure out, is this person depressed or are they suicidal? Because there's obviously a big shortage of mental health care professionals worldwide. So that has the ability to sort of democratize healthcare. And I think things like that are super exciting. So it's something that I'm finding myself more interested in and drawn to, and spending more of my own sort of time and energy outside of work just learning about, because I find it fascinating.
Sounds super cool. Thanks so much, Kelly. Thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely to have you on the show. I hope to meet you sometime in person, maybe in sunny Barcelona or maybe in California. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's great to meet you.